So my point is this, it's not going to replace me, because at the end of the day, there's going to be that 1% chance that it's going to mess up. But guess what? I'm there to make sure that as my 20 years of medical experience, my clinical gestalt, my experience as a human, my empathy will always be there. But now it's AI plus Dr. Castro to give the best care to you.
Welcome to Growing Your Business with People, the go-to podcast for CEOs and business leaders seeking to grow their business with their biggest and most important investment, people. Today, we're thrilled to have Dr. Harvey Castro with us, an emergency room physician turned trailblazing entrepreneur and author. Known for his innovative approach for intertwining AI and healthcare, Dr. Castro has founded over 30 companies and penned numerous insightful books on the subject. Join us today as we delve into the fascinating world of AI, leadership, entrepreneurship, and the intersection of technology and healthcare, all with the insights from one of the industry's most dynamic figures. Dr. Castro, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. True honor.
Oh, it's great to have you. I'm so excited. So, Harvey, do you mind if I call you Harvey?
Yeah, call me Harvey, please.
Very good. So I know you think of yourself as a blend of a medical doctor, an entrepreneur, and an AI technologist. It's kind of like the 2020s version of a mad scientist. But additionally, one of your books is even being considered as the basis for a movie. So tell the audience a little bit more about you and your background and how it led up to some of the work that you're doing today.
Yeah. Well, I got to go way back to, I grew up in New York City, and my mother had me as a teenager, and we literally grew up in poverty together. And in my mind, I had no idea that things were bad, because I thought that's just normal for everybody else. And so fast forward, my mom just really did a good job, and I jokingly tell her, brainwashing me, telling me I could be anything I wanted, to just reach for the star. I just had to work hard. And fast forward, I ended up really just believing it, to the point where when I was 16, I had my first business and I was actually paying for my own car insurance. I bought my first car. Fast forward, I couldn't afford college. So I ended up joining the Army to help me pay for college. But then I ended up just thinking outside the box, calling different companies, telling them, for example, like book companies, tell them, hey, if you give me the book for free, I'll review it for free, and then I would get free books. And so this kind of mentality and kind of striving and pushing on the entrepreneurship really kind of made me stand out, and to the point where obviously I got into medical school. And the reason they want to make this movie is because they wanted to talk. One of the producers by chance read my book and called me. It's like, hey, we want to make this into a movie. And so we're literally negotiating the final parts of the contract. And I said, hey, why are you so interested? And he's like, look, I just love the story of what has happened. You know, all the things against you, you really shouldn't be where you're at. And, you know, during the book, I talk about different principles of success and, you know, working hard and whatnot, all the things my mom taught me. But big picture, because of that, it's really given me the building blocks to really take off. Often I look at my LinkedIn profile and I'm like, yeah, that doesn't seem like it's even possible. Like I'm thinking some people are going to think I lied about all this stuff, but I just... find a true passion behind stuff. Like if I see a problem, I'm just going to jump on it. And it's been evident multiple times in my life where there's a big problem and I really don't like it. And I don't just try to fix it, but I literally go out there and create a business out of it or an industry or something. And it's funny because it never starts with the business idea. It starts with the pain point and then it just evolves into something bigger.
Well, it's interesting that you describe it in that term, because obviously your training as a medical doctor would say, you know, first understand the problem and then discover the root cause and then start working it, you know, and some of your training, even before you became a medical doctor, it looks like, you know, really led up to that problem solving, that scrappiness, that, that entrepreneurial spirit. I've shared with my guests, I grew up in rural Ohio, and in seventh grade, I had one pair of pants to my name and they didn't fit. I actually had to bobby pin them to my socks so that they would actually go all the way down to my shoes, because that's all we had, you know. That's what, and I was growing too fast that summer, you know, so we didn't have money for another pair of jeans. So I get it. Like, you know, for those who understand what it means to be scrappy and what it means to go out there and kind of fight for your food, once we get to the place where we're at now, then it's amazing the things we can do when we stay hungry, you know, and that obviously you've stayed hungry. So today, I can't wait to talk to you, because we're going to talk about three main topics. One is the role of AI in modern healthcare. Okay, that's probably big enough for an entire show. But no, we're going to keep on going. We're going to hit another topic, entrepreneurial leadership in a tech-driven world. And then third, to kind of cap it all, to you pull it all together, we're going to talk about the intersection of artificial intelligence, healthcare, and people. And we're going to explore the extreme opportunities as well as the real risks that exist. So, hey, let's just get started here. The role of AI in modern healthcare, really talk about like what the integration of AI in healthcare is revolutionizing the industry. According to a study by PwC, AI applications have the potential to create $15.7 trillion in global economic value by 2030. And healthcare is one of the major beneficiaries. AI's role changes from improving diagnostic to personalized treatment plans, enhancing patient care, and creating operational efficiencies. Dr. Castro, with his extensive background in emergency medicine and entrepreneurial ventures in healthcare technology, has been at the forefront of some of this transformation. In his writings, he's emphasized the potential of AI to significantly improve patient outcomes. For instance, he's in one of his publications, he talks about AI in healthcare is more than just a trend, it's a necessity to improve patient care and reduce costs. So, Dr. Castro, you've highlighted several background and groundbreaking issues around AI in healthcare. Could you share what you believe is the single most impactful way AI is currently transforming healthcare?
Yeah, so that's a really tough one. But I'm going to say, I want to give a quick background. I was blessed back in 2022. I'm the first person in the world to write a book on ChatGPT and healthcare. And so with that statement, one of the most powerful things I believe is giving that power to the patient, enabling a patient to have more information. Everybody out there has heard of Dr. Google, but the ability for AI to be able to break things down to a point where anyone can understand. As an ER doctor with 20 years experience, I have told multiple people different things, and I have had to talk to different people from different parts of the country, different parts of the world. But the one key thing that I think will change is how we communicate. And I know you're thinking, oh, that's really simple, but let me drive that point. Doctors, unfortunately, sometimes think in doctor world and doctor terms, and they have a really hard time breaking it down to someone in different education levels. And that means that anyone's is not smart or anything like that. No, some people really understand healthcare, and some people say, hey, I have a medical degree. I just didn't go to med school, but I know this stuff. Other people, you could say something really basic and they have zero idea. So it's really hard to converse with different people because you can't use the same statement for everybody. And so imagine the world where now we have people have different age groups. Obviously, we're talking to kids. We talk to people from Texas, not the same way you talk to someone in the East Coast, and people around the country, I mean, the world. And so here's my point. This simple tool to be able to talk through AI, and me to be able to type into AI and be like, how do I talk to a five-year-old about their asthma? And what key points and what words should I use? But then taking that same example and putting it into generative AI, so something like DALL-E, where it can actually make a cartoon or a coloring book. And instead of seeing my patient and saying, here, parents, here, read this. This is what you got to go do. And I got to run to the next patient. What if I gave them a coloring book and I had my nurse or myself start coloring with the child and going over some of the basics? I mean, that one simple thing that I said, communication, now is huge. But now imagine... I used to work next to an airport, and it was the airport that took care of every single person that landed in Dallas. So if anyone got sick on the plane, they came to that one hospital first. And so there was times that I would get people from around the world that my electronic medical system did not have that language to translate. And I would have to call a translation line, and sometimes the translation line, that person wasn't available. And so could you imagine communicating and it's life or death issues and someone's sick and you have to make decisions quickly? How nice would it be to have an AI that helps me translate? And maybe it's not the best, but hey, it's the best thing at that second. And so imagine here in the United States, everybody's big on football. But if I say football in any place outside of the United States, they're going to think it's soccer. And so imagine me going through an explanation about sports and how the quarterback's the key person. But then that person in another country would be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so imagine what a poor healthcare outcome I would be giving. But what if I use AI to give those examples in their culture, in their sex, you know, male or female, and age group? And now I can really communicate better than I could even imagine. And so that's just a quick way of just saying, hey, this thing is here to stay. And it's just about the human being plus the AI. It's going to be better than just the human being alone. And I truly believe that I'm augmenting myself and making me more efficient.
You know, it's pretty incredible because I have two children, both with type 1 diabetes, right? And both of them developed it, in their, kind of 12 to 14 year old range. And my daughter, it was hard because we didn't know what was going on. We actually were worried she had an eating disorder. She was losing weight so fast. You know, if we'd had a ChatGPT or something that we could have actually looked up and put all her symptoms in it, it probably would have said your number one symptom, if you were put it in right now, would have been, oh yeah, you need to check for diabetes. But we were not realizing what it was and not necessarily going to the doctor until it became very serious and we got her the help she needed. For my son after that, obviously we recognized the symptoms very early, but it was devastating for him because he's a sports kid. And he's thinking, oh my goodness, now I have to take insulin and like I have all these things. And we're lucky enough to have moved to Boston and be in the Joslin Clinic. But even now, my daughter's moved away to another city, and has to deal with some doctors that don't, that are not trained in type 1 diabetes and don't understand. And if they had something that could help them understand and be able to bridge that gap for the patient and for the patient to communicate both with the doctor and the doctor to communicate back, how powerful that would be to be able to get that diagnosis clear to them as well as, a clear treatment plan. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. I hadn't even considered about the language gap or the really the communication gap between the patient and the doctor. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, all these things, it's different because I have literally 20 years experience. I've been in the trenches. I get it. And that's the advantage of being a doctor, creating AI tools for healthcare providers, because I understand the issues. I've dealt with them firsthand. And I really think we need more doctors to be involved in the trenches and with Microsoft and the big dogs, because they're going to make these products with or without doctors. And then at the end of the day, it's all about the patient. So if we can make the amazing tools, then the patient's going to get a better outcome. And that's literally why I've been writing all these books and out there teaching about AI in healthcare.
This podcast is brought to you by Paradox AI, also known as Olivia, recruiting's most advanced AI assistant. I use Paradox at my previous organization, and their team helped us create a candidate concierge experience that ensured a fast hiring process that still felt very human. We literally hired hundreds of thousands of people, many of whom were critical healthcare workers needed during the pandemic. It's not just me. Organizations like McDonald's, General Motors, Unilever, and L'Oreal use this technology to create engaging and fast candidate experiences. Go to paradox.ai to learn more about the amazing things Paradox and Olivia can do for you. So what do you think might be some of the ethical considerations as we go about thinking about the evolution of AI in healthcare, and how do they need to be addressed? Obviously this thing is taking off faster than anybody could even predict. So what are some of the issues that you'd consider?
Yeah. So obviously, my brain's already racing of all the answers. Obviously, the number one thing people will say is the bias in the algorithm, you know, and I'm going to start by saying, you know, there's different flavors out there. There's ChatGPT, there's Bard, there's all this different artificial intelligence. And depending on which one you're using, they're going to have pros and cons. But the bottom line is all of them have what's called bias. And what I mean by bias is that it's been programmed by humans, and we know humans are not perfect. And when a human enters something into a computer, then they may be reinforcing, let's just call it bad behavior. And so if that human being believes X and Y, then it's going to propagate that principle of bad thought and put it into the algorithm. The other bias that we're seeing, think of it this way. If I'm studying a certain population and I'm saying, okay, this population was studied throughout the United States and I use all the different possibilities representing as best as possible here in the United States, then it would, the bias, then you could argue that it wasn't trained for parts outside of the United States. And so then that would be another type of bias. And so these algorithms, unfortunately, will reinforce, let's say, bad behavior. And so how do we fix this as a bias? Well, we know at the end of the day, humans are going to make mistakes. And so we need to be very careful as a doctor to understand how to use these tools. Because if I know that this issue exists, then literally I will take this information with a grain of salt. I won't call it the gold standard that, oh my gosh, ChatGPT said this and therefore it must be the true. No. The other thing I want to point out is that here in the United States, we're really blessed because a lot of these companies are made and produced and they're using information in the United States. But my point is this, ChatGPT is not intended 100% to be used outside the United States because of these biases. Case in point, if, again, you're not supposed to do this, but if ChatGPT said, hey, this is the treatment for breast cancer, it may not be the same one for a different ethnic person or a different part of the world. And so it needs to be done with a grain of salt. The last thing I want to say about this ethical part, we need a food label in our large language models. So basically what I mean by that, so that anybody, you can pick up ChatGPT and look at it, and it'd be like a little document that comes with it. And you can say, okay, here are the biases, here's the good, here's the bad, and here's how you really shouldn't use it. That way the consumer can do these things safely. And I know I'm really big on ChatGPT in healthcare. I'm not worried about the doctors and healthcare professionals because they went to med school and they get it. I'm more worried about, and this is the other ethical part, I'm more worried about the patients that may think, oh, this is the gold standard. Oh, you know what? Especially like outside the United States, you can go to a pharmacy and say, okay, ChatGPT told me I had cancer, or ChatGPT told me X or Y, and I'm just going to go to the pharmacy and get this drug because it also told me here's the drug. And so that's where I'm more worried. But I love your example of, hey, here are the symptoms. Here's what's going on. And then it say, oh, it may be diabetes, this and that. And now you go to your doctor and say, hey, I'm really worried about diabetes. Can you look at my child? Because here's what ChatGPT said. And that's okay. And in fact, I promote it. I'm telling my patients, I made a little bot to take their bot with them to the clinic. And so when they have a question, they're putting it in there, translating. And actually, the bot is coming up with questions before they even show up to the ER. That way, they really are informed. That way, that 13-minute visit with the doctor is really high yield. Could you imagine having all the questions and then you know what to ask? And then it's right there and you're like, okay, I should ask this. I should better understand that.
That's terrific. I mean, that's really what it boils down to, because the doctors have limited time. And if you can help focus the conversation on the combination of maybe the symptoms that you're having and the potential outcomes, working with them hand in glove, then, you know, then that doctor is going to be able to help you get to an outcome and possibly a treatment or therapy that you need to more quickly. One of the things that's interesting, my son and I were talking today, and not related to medical, but he goes, yeah, it was I pop in certain types of problems in the ChatGPT. He goes, you know, 8 times out of 10, it gives you the wrong answer. And I said, do you tell it that it gives it the wrong answer? It goes, yep, I tell it that it gives it the wrong answer because I know that it'll help make it better over time. It goes, but he goes, I wouldn't trust it for anything that I do that is mathematical. And I said, how funny is that? Like, you have, there's all sorts of other programs that are out there that could very easily solve these same mathematical problems. But ChatGPT is is almost filled with too much information, that it actually gets itself confused in solving it. And that's part of this. It's not just bias. It's also, you know, different types of, I think we call hallucinations or halo effects or other things that we see out there. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So let me talk about that, because that's where it helps having a little bit of AI background. AI, at the end of the day, is just predicting the next best word. So if I ask a question, it's literally in ChatGPT's mind, it's just zeros and ones, and it's just trying to guess what it thinks is the answer. And it has a hard time, if you tell it, hey, write me an 800-word document, it has a hard time looking in the future. And it'll start writing, and it may not give you 800 words. It may give you 600. It'll never do that, because it has a hard time, ironically, with math. And the reason it has a hard time with math is it's just guessing the next word. It's not programmed to tell you 1 + 1 = 2. It's more like 1 + 1, and then it's doing this math equation that it's coming to 2, but it's not actually doing math. It's doing probability for that next number. And so it's interesting. And so honestly, it doesn't do well with math. Now, with that said, if you, and I'm going to go geeky on you, if you tell it, 1 + 1 = 2, then what is 1 + 2? It'll get that one right, because you gave it up. That's what they go into prompt engineering and stuff like that. And I know that was a little convoluted, but
I love
that's
it.
The answer.
See, that's a trick that we're going to have to use when we go into ChatGPT a little later. I can see all the folks listening right now going, okay, I'm checking this out. 1 + 1 or versus 1 + 1 = 2. Now, what's 1 + 2 =? That's cool. So I'm going to pivot now, because I think we've hit this, but I'd like to go into the fact that you've been an entrepreneur, right? And you've started up, I think, 30 some companies. You're also living in the tech-driven world. So it requires, honestly, a blend of innovation, adaptability, foresight. And you've taken your journey through founding all these companies, and you've had to really take these competencies and qualities and exemplify them. But the tech industry, you know, especially startups, is known for its fast pace and constantly evolving nature. And as Harvard Business Review article successfully talks about, tech leaders are those, the ones that are most successful, are the ones who not only understand their product, but also the larger ecosystem in which they operate. And you actually were quoted as saying, in the world of tech entrepreneurship, agility and the ability to foresee market trends are key to staying ahead. So this insight reflects your approach to nurturing growth and innovation in a competitive landscape. So I guess the question is, In your journey as an entrepreneur, what are some key leadership strategies that you found to be most effective in managing and growing a tech-driven company?
You know, that's a tough one. Again, I love your questions. You know, at the end of the day, I think I work a little bit backwards, in the sense that I let my passion drive me. Case in point, in the entrepreneur world, I really was not happy with patient care. I became a doctor to give my heart to my patients, to really work with them. And when administration told me, hey, doc, you're spending too much time with patients, you need to hurry up and you need to order less because that's costing us too much money, I thought, I don't understand. I'm a doctor. I'm here to help. I didn't go to med school to do finance. I went to med school to help people. And so fast forward, I created my own ERs, my own freestandings. I trained doctors. I created my own culture of how to take care of patients. And so to answer your question, what is the success? I really think the secret of success is following that passion, following that pain point, and creating a solution, but not just any solution, to think outside the box. You know, in medicine, we're kind of confined as a box to think this way. We try not to move outside that box. We move very slowly. And, you know, case in point, in my emergency rooms, I would have patients just come straight in. And if I knew it was a broken ankle, I would just take them straight to x-ray. And instead of waiting for them to get the x-ray and medicine, I would send the nurse back there to give them medicine. And if I had to set that bone, I wouldn't have them come back to the ER. I'd go way out to the x-ray room and then set their bone there and get the specialist and maybe telemedicine there, because I thought that's the right thing to do. And then nurses would be like, hey, you're breaking protocol. You're not supposed to do this. And then I'm like, but tell me who's going to hurt here. What am I doing wrong? Who's going to die? What's the bad part? And so by following that passion, by doing the right thing, I was innovating. People were, and the funny thing is then later the protocol changed that if something patient like that came, that's the way you were supposed to do it. And so I always say, don't follow the rules per se. Do the right thing, follow your passion, and you're going to end up doing things that are going to make a difference. And people are going to see it, believe it, and they're going to want to do business with you because they see that this is different.
I love that. So don't necessarily follow the rules, follow your passion, do the thing that's right, and then watch as things change. There's a book out called Leading with Questions. It's Dr. Markart and Bob Teede. And Bob's going to be a guest on the show. I'm not sure about the lineup that we end up, whether he's already been a guest in the show when you watch this or he will be, but one or the other. One of the things that was in his book was a military officer, and that officer, one of the things that he had to take his ship, and the ship was one of the worst performing ships in the whole U.S. Navy. And one of the questions that he would ask, and it gets right to your point, Harvey, is the fact that he'd have people bring to him and say, "Hey, I need you to do X," and his first question is, "Why do we do this?" And then they would stop in their tracks, and 99% of the time they had no answer. They had no idea. He said, "Nope, I'm not doing it. Not until you can come back and tell me why we do this. Then I'll consider doing it." You know? And then what happened was that not only did they come back with answers, but sometimes they'd have suggestions for better ways to do it. And then third, they started asking questions deep into their unit. It turned out it became the fourth or fifth best performing ship in the whole U.S. Navy within a course of 18 months, right? Just with a few questions. And I think that's what you're talking about here, is really transforming cultures to fostering innovation within teams. And that's really going to be my next question. So you almost answered it right there. You challenged it. You didn't necessarily play by the rules. You followed the thing that was the right thing to do. Do you have any other suggestions of things that really help foster that innovation amongst folks outside of just yourself? Obviously, you know how to do it, but how do you get other people to be innovative?
I tell people you gotta, if you don't like change, you gotta welcome change. I think one of the other barriers is we are so used to looking at things a certain way. And unfortunately, the school system also breaks us from our creativity and tells us you can't do X or Y. And they don't tell you why either. They just said, no, that's one of the rules. And so I try my best to keep an open mind. So that's my other advice. You have to keep an open mind. Even when you think, oh, you're 100% right. What if in that 1% chance you fail to learn something? Because had you opened your mind, maybe you can understand. And this is where I think I've been blessed in that I'm taking the AI world, I'm taking my business background, and I'm taking healthcare, and I'm literally putting it together. And in a weird way, I'm able to see things that other people just can't see. And so that gives me that competitive advantage. Let me give you a quick example. Right prior to coming on the show, I help a lot of startup companies, and I do a lot of talks for weekend retreats to how to help people maximize AI. And one of the businesses that I'm working on is AI and ER, and combining the two and creating a new product. And so one of my business partners gave me a whole entire business plan. And so fast forward what I did, and I thought, huh, this is outside the box. We created our own personal AI that you don't have access. It's not out there. It's private. It's not through ChatGPT. And then I uploaded his business plan. And then I'm leveraging, let's just say AI. And then I went into it. And I said, out of this business plan, what are the strengths? And it went through all the strengths. Then I had written an article, an email back to one of my business partner, and I just copied it and put it into the AI. And then I said, what does Dr. Castro think of this business plan? And then it combined what I thought with the weaknesses and the strengths. And then right before coming on the show, I thought, huh, this is kind of fun. So I emailed the other two co-founders and I said, hey, when we, actually it's three, so it's the four of us all together, the other three guys. And I said, hey, moving forward, when we have to make business decisions, when we have to pivot right or left, I'm going to ask you guys to use this. And then this becomes our group chat equivalent. And then right before coming on the show, I called my other business partner. I'm like, dude, this is a business idea right here. We can create something for personal people, create their own AI models. They can upload information. And what an amazing output. Because now it's private. I'm using AI and I'm using my own data. And so I thought, literally, that and that's my day. Every day I come up with stuff that I'm like, oh my gosh, what about this? And so this is the fun part of being an entrepreneur and kind of fixing problems.
I think AI is going to really explode for folks who are naturally curious. I currently have 4 ChatGPT tabs open on my desktop right now, working through different problems and questions and conversations. And one of the things that I noticed was Kathleen Hogan, who's the CHRO of Microsoft, said, we're going to transform our culture from one of a bunch of know-it-alls to a bunch of learn-it-alls. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about here is that natural curiosity and being willing to ask the right questions and then say, that's interesting. Now that answer actually leads me to another question, which leads me to another question. And then by the time that we're done, I was like, okay, I feel like I have a better understanding. Because I think the questions really aren't looking, we can't be taking questions for answers. We got to be taking them to try and seek understanding. Right. And I think that's what also I've heard you say. This has been a terrific conversation. Harvey, if I'd known that this would be this good, I would have had you on months ago, except I couldn't get our schedules to gel up. So this is terrific. Yeah. So I'm so glad. So let me talk to you about, let me ask you, as a tech entrepreneur, what are some of the biggest challenges you faced as you come into this tech space? And maybe tell us a little story about maybe how you overcame it.
You know, that's you're killing me, dude, which is good.
Sorry.
this is a good question. No, this is good. No, it's making me think. You know, one of the hardest parts for me personally and my business partner and I feel this sounds, I don't want to sound pompous at all. I try to be very humble, but I feel like sometimes I'm too ahead of the curve. I'm way too many steps ahead. And I catch myself wanting to do product X. And then I tell people and they're like, whoa, it's like the equivalent of like running a marathon and they don't know how to walk yet. And I'm like, dude, this is what it can do. And they're like, I don't understand. And so to give you an example, about a year ago, my business partner and I developed the software. Basically, within 5 minutes, we can create a podcast and I could take any blog, plug it in. ChatGPT will make a summary, make a picture, make a blog, make a transcript, and make the audio and clone my voice, my business partner voice, and it'll be out there in about 5 minutes. And I thought, okay, this is really ahead of the time. And when I started telling people, they were like, I don't trust AI, I don't know. And then others like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then so we literally delayed this on purpose because people were not receptive. People didn't understand. And so literally we just released that this week and now we're getting a different vibe. People are like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I get it. And I thought, interesting. Like we had this, yet we really couldn't push it because people weren't accepting it or just didn't understand it. And so another example, and your question, how do we overcome it, this, is I told my business partner when that happened, I said, moving forward, we can't shoot for the limousine. We got to shoot for one task, do it very well, show them how to walk. And then once they know how to walk, now we can start showing them how to run. And then later we'll be able to do more advanced. Case in point, I developed this AI that I'm trying to lose some weight. And so I created my own bot. I wrote a book on weight loss. And then I use leverage ChatGPT plus this book. And it does everything for me. And then I thought, this is how I'm going to explain it to people. I'm going to create one bot, one idea, one pain point, and say, here, use this bot, ask it questions, explore it. And once they understand that one principle, then I can say, hey, we could do this with this other bot and they can do longevity. Or we could do, I did another one about how to learn the Bible. And so I wrote a book on how to learn the Bible with ChatGPT and I created a workstation. So somebody can ask it questions, have a conversation, have devotionals, have everything in that one workstation. And I thought this is the best way to market this, to present it to people. Because if I tell them different people, different ways, they will have no idea. But if I know I speak to someone that wants to know more about AI detectives, then I can give them an AI workstation and detective, and they'll get it. And so that's how I overcame these problems, by doing one small section, do it really well, and then pointing it to that right population.
That's powerful. And who would have thought that you could use ChatGPT to study the Bible? But I will tell you that that's actually quite effective. It's it may be scary for some folks, but it gives you some really interesting outputs as a result. So, or depending on whether it's BART or any of the different, the different AIs out there that you can use.
Well, Jeff, I'm going to jump in and say real quick, what I did is I used the NIV version of the Bible, mm-hmm. and then I uploaded it to our AI. And so that way, when you're having a conversation, I know a lot of people enjoy reading the NIV version of it. And then that way it's able to explore every part of that, that verse or different interpretation. And I thought, man, this is amazing. So I literally have all these bots lined up. And so when I want to read about X or Y, I want to learn something more, I have it ready to go for me. So it's kind of fun.
How cool is that? Well, you know, something you didn't know that you were going to learn about how to study your Bible on this podcast today, but you got it. So that's that's just one of the bonuses here. So let's pivot to question number three. We're going to talk about the intersection of AI, healthcare, and people. Now, this is where it gets really dicey. So the synergy between AI, healthcare, and people is really delicate. It's a delicate balance. The World Economic Forum highlights that while AI presents an unprecedented opportunity in healthcare, it also raises significant challenges, particularly in maintaining the human element in patient care. And I think we talked a little bit about this. Dr. Castro's perspective is crucial here, as he's consistently advocated for a patient-centric approach to healthcare technology. In an interview, you mentioned the true power of AI in healthcare lies in its ability to enhance human skills, not replace them. You know, your emphasis on the augmentation of human capabilities by AI rather than their substitution is particularly relevant in the context of your podcast focus on the interplay of technology and human resources, and the capabilities. So let's talk for just a second about this one question. Considering your extensive experience in both healthcare and AI, how do you see AI augmenting human capabilities in healthcare without replacing the human touch that's so essential? Now, we've already talked about one, communication, and I love that. So do you have another one that you think would be a great augmentation to healthcare?
Yeah, so I'm going to personalize this by saying two things. Number one, according to Scientific America, last year they did an article, I think it came out about May of last year, and it said the IQ of ChatGPT is around 155. The average human IQ is between 90 and 100, somewhere in there. Albert Einstein, the big dogs, Elon Musk, those guys are batting between 155 and 165. And so the fact that ChatGPT has 155, that says a lot. And so how can it help me as a human being? I'm going to wear two hats. Let's start with the doctor hat. Well, let's start with the patient hat first. As a patient, I'm not saying patients are dumb or anything like that. I'm just saying that we have a tool that we're going to try to strive for. And more than likely, because of what I said, the average is 90 to 100, then more than likely, it's going to be in some ways stronger than us. Mm-hmm. And so if instead of our average to the mean is going down, now our average to the mean is going up, meaning every time this thing gets better and better, it's actually pushing me and increasing what I call the healthcare IQ. And so my theory is the more I understand healthcare, the more I understand medicine, then my IQ will tell me, my healthcare IQ will tell me as a patient, maybe I shouldn't smoke. And I know you guys are like, oh, dude, really? I know that one. Of course you do, because when I was a kid, it was common to be in a cab and the cab driver smoking in front of you. It was common to go anywhere and people would smoke. But the younger population listening to this, they'll be like, oh, no, I've never seen that. That's my point. Our healthcare IQ has gone up to the point where none of us in our wildest dream would start picking up smoking right now. We might pick up some other bad habit, but it won't be smoking. With that said, what if I said, and I'm making this one up, what if I said we're not supposed to eat more than so many calories a day, or that we're only supposed to eat maybe 10 hours a day. But let's just pretend, fast forward, because of AI, or fast forward, our IQ level gets a certain point in healthcare that that's a given. Like, oh no, we don't do that. And all of a sudden, I mean, again, I'm just making up a story. Then all of a sudden, we're all living another 5 to 10 years more because of that one thing. And that's what I'm saying where I say healthcare IQ from an AI. As a patient, it's going to push us to start learning things and doing things. And it's going to change my habits of maybe why I should take my medicine. AI will maybe I'd be able to put a VR. I got this prop here. I'm going to pull it up. That maybe VR will teach me how to take medicine, or, hey, you didn't take your medicine. These are augmented reality. So I could take a picture of this screen and it'll tell me how much. I could take a picture of my medicine and it'll tell me what kind of medicine it is. I can hit a little button here and take a picture of you right now. Or it could connect to my ear and it connects to ChatGPT. And if you ask me a question, it'll process and then it'll tell me and I can answer for what it's saying, and you wouldn't know that. And so my point is, what an amazing tool. What if I was in the emergency room? Now I'm going to wear the doctor hat and I had these bad boys on and say, you're my patient, Jeff. And say your family practice doctor is Mr. Jones or Dr. Jones. Now, this is not there yet, but it can be. Now I can turn this on. Now I'm having a live stream with Dr. Jones. I can look at you and you can be Jones, and I can send this wirelessly to the TV behind me. And now we're having a conversation, and you can, and then Dr. Jones may be like, oh, hey, can you check Jeff's reflexes in front of me? I want to see his reflexes, and I can do it. What a way to create a better healthcare. And then me as a doctor, I'm a human being. At 2-3 in the morning, I'm exhausted. And so what if I had a tool like AI? Again, not that I'm an idiot, not that I don't understand, but what if my human part of me is 2 in the morning, I'm tired, maybe I haven't slept for 20 hours now, and I'm not at my best, and I forget something? You know, more than likely I have muscle memory, but what if there was this one fact that I'm like, oh my God, if it was during the day, I would think about it right away. This one, crap, I forgot. But what if AI was in my electronic medical record, or I know people are going to cringe when I say this, have a robot next to me with the eyes of ChatGPT-4 that can look at Jeff and say, oh, his hemoglobin A1C is this, his blood pressure is this. When you ask that question, his blood pressure dropped. You may want to ask that question again. What an amazing experience. What if the AI called me out and say, hey, doc, did you consider this? I see it in your note. You forgot to do this. Oh, go back to Mr. Jeff and check his reflexes, or look behind his eyes, check this fundoscope to do X, Y, and Z. So my point is this, it's not going to replace me, because at the end of the day, there's going to be that 1% chance that it's going to mess up. But guess what? I'm there to make sure that as my 20 years of medical experience, my clinical gestalt, my experience as a human, my empathy will always be there. But now it's AI plus Dr. Castro to give the best care to you.
You know, and as people try to grapple with the concept of augmented intelligence, I mean, I tell folks, I said, look at Google Maps. That's your augmented intelligence right there. Last time I checked, if I go in a foreign city or someplace where I've never been before, if you ask me to get from point A to point B without Google Maps or some sort of mapping software, like, I'm done. Like, you know, I could probably maybe figure out the main roads, but you get down to the back streets, and if anything's closed, I'm done. But Google Maps knows when the roads are closed for the most part. It knows the best route. It understands the traffic pattern at that moment, at that time, and can reroute you around different things without you even thinking about it. But still, you end up having to still drive the car. You still have to be in the car because you're the one getting from point A to point B. That's that augmented intelligence that that really helps take you from somebody that is struggling trying to break out. Now I'm going to age myself here. A triptych, if anybody remembers that from the AAA days when we had these like flipping things that we had to go through and figure out where we were. And they remember how they used to take a yellow marker and like color down the. Now we're looking just like we're just listening to it going, hey, turn left at such and such street, turn right at such and such street. And you're like, oh, well, that makes sense. That's easy. And that's augmented intelligence.
I'm going to pause you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pause you and let's talk about that 1% chance or less than 1% chance where the GPS is wrong. And there was a case out of California where this individual was snowing really bad, couldn't see, and was going by 100% what the GPS said. And it said to go right and it went off a cliff, unfortunately. And so my point is this, we still need the human. We still need to understand. We can't trust these things. I'm a huge advocate. I'm not saying don't, but I'm saying trust and verify everything. And look, you know, make sure that we still is the human in the loop. Don't give up that that rights of your that you have and just give it all to technology. Be that human. Balance the two, and together be more than just one or the other.
For those people who love watching The Office, you're going to remember the episode with Michael Scott and Dwight, where Michael has to turn and he says, the GPS is telling me to turn right here. And Dwight's going, no, stop. It's a lake. It's a lake. Don't turn here. It's my, that's one of my favorites. But, you know, quite honestly, the trouble is that, you know, this is a big change for healthcare providers. This is, I mean, integrating AI in your work is a major shift. This is bigger than electronic medical records, right? This is bigger than anything they've ever experienced in their career. How do you think that healthcare, how would you recommend that they better prepare for integrating AI into their work?
I'm a firm believer, and this applies everywhere. You know, if you're arguing with your spouse or at work, I really think it boils down to education. One of you guys are seeing things differently, and the goal is to be open-minded to see both sides. And so with that said, I really think it's about educating the administrators, educating all the healthcare professionals to understand the good, the bad, and the ugly of AI. And once they truly understand, they're more likely to accept. But if they don't know, people fear the unknown. People don't want change. But if we can make that change easier, explain the benefits, and then this is why I'm really stuck on, we need healthcare professionals to be part of the solution. Because if Microsoft, they're great and smart, but if they create a product that the end user, like the doctor, the nurse, is not going to want to use, then it doesn't matter. But if you create a product with the doctor in mind, the nurse, because the doctor and the nurse are going to be the best advocate for patients. They're not going to push for something that's not going to help the patient. They went into the profession because they love patients and they want to do what's best for patients. And so if you create that mind of a doctor and a nurse and front care workers, plus AI or technology, could you imagine the solutions that you're going to start making and making a true difference? Because company X may think, oh, this needs to be solved. But then if you go into the trenches and you talk to that facility, they may be like, oh, no, you got this totally wrong. You need to fix this before you fix that.
Well, Harvey, I think you're going to be pleased to know that some of the questions that I asked today were augmented by ChatGPT. So I will give all credit where credit's due. Man. I did come out with the outline and came up with the score and the run of show. I said, hey, take some of these questions and some of the things and also help me find some of these quotes. So those quotes I give straight to ChatGPT. I don't know where ChatGPT found them, but I was happy to have them. So that's great. So tell me, you know, this, the last question is really the one that we have for all of our guests. And as you know, our audience is a bunch of senior business leaders, CEOs, CFOs, CHROs, et cetera. But what are one or two pieces of advice, practical advice that you could offer them that they could be able to use tomorrow to help grow their business with people?
You know, the number one, I think, I believe, especially for CEOs, and I know this, I sound like a broken record, but you have to lead by example. When I owned emergency rooms, I was often found cleaning the parking lot, cleaning the toilets, walking around, picking up any trash, because I thought this facility reflects me. If this facility looks bad, or if I tell person X, hey, you didn't do your job. Hey, there's trash on the floor. Hey, this is going on. But if the president of the company, the founder of the company, the person who founded over 350 people working for him, shows up and is doing the job that someone else, that some of the doctors are like, oh no, housekeeping will be here tonight. I'm like, yeah, but we'll probably see a bunch of people and you want them to see this? This is a reflection of you. It's like, no, I will do it. And I think that's a powerful statement, because if you're willing to lead by example and you're humble, then people are more likely to follow you because they know that you're just like them. And I know this MD and all that, people call me doctor and all that. And at the end of the day, I'm like, no, I am just like you. It's just that I decided to do a couple other things. but I could have gone the other way. And so that to me is the number one example. I think lead by example, be humble, and people will follow you. The second thing, I'm a type A personality. I will work myself to death. I will sit here so much. And unfortunately, last year, I probably gained about 25 pounds because I literally sat here. But my second thing is this. At the end of the day, we don't know when our last day is. None of us. And so I'm going to say every single day, I try my best to call my loved ones, tell them I love them. I try my best to make memorable moments every time I get. And I think it's really important that we have this balance. I think it's really important that we continue moving forward, but that we have this peace of mind that you can say at the end of the day, I'm going to go watch the sunset. At the end of the day, I'm going to spend time with my wife. At the end of today, I will make sure I make time for X or Y. Because at the end of the day, what matters most is your relationship with those loved ones around you, not your accolades, not your books, not your degrees, not the CEO position. What really matters when you are gone from this earth is the people around you that say, that guy or that woman really made a life changer for me, always was there, was positive, gave me that hug, gave me that security. And I think that is the goal.
Wow. That's awesome advice. I love it. Lead by example. And then remember that, you know, to hug your loved ones, make those memories, and don't make it all about work all the time. Make sure that you create that balance and make sure that that's part of your life. The first one reminds me of my former CEO at CVS Health, Larry Merlot. He made it a point that every time he went to visit a store, no matter who he had with him, a customer or other executives, they would get carts. You didn't walk in the, if you're an executive at CVS Health, you did not walk into a store without getting carts. Even if they had no idea who you were and you weren't there on a visit, you were just there to pick up your prescription or buy a mouthwash or toothpaste or some, you know, some hair gel or whatever, like you got carts. And it wasn't ever said to you that like that was something that was expected, but he led by example. He did it. And then everybody else would say, yeah, that's just what we do. When you go into CVS, you get carts. If you see something, if you see maybe some of the product aren't pulled to the front, if you don't have to go through the whole store and pull every product to the front, but you pull the ones to the front that you're in front of, right? I still remember when my first week, that was the first job, I was stock. You know, I was a vice president running, doing stock and taking out the trash and doing all that other stuff because that's how you learn how to be in CVS. And I love that. It's that grounding. But the second point is probably equally, if not more important, is that it's so easy for us to get carried away with what we do because the work that we're doing is very important. The work you're doing is tremendously important and it can just carry you away. And we need to take care of ourselves and more importantly, take care of those around us and show them that, that we love and care for them because they're going to be around long after whatever business venture we decide to have may have been sold or gone off into the wind somewhere. So thank you so much. This has been awesome. Thank you very much, Dr. Castro. I really appreciate it.
It's been an honor to be here and thank you so much. And if I could ever be of help, just feel free to reach out. And anyone out there, just hit me up. I enjoy this stuff. I really do.
Obviously, you're. But I promise to. I promise to continue to give you all these tough questions if I ever bring you back on. just more of them because ChatGPT will be feeding them to me. No, just joking. Okay. So thank you so much, Dr. Harvey Castro, for your impressive insights into AI, healthcare, and tech-driven entrepreneurial leadership. You know, my takeaways from our conversation is AI is a healthcare game changer. And then second is we need to be agile and great listeners as entrepreneurs. And we have to have a growth mindset, be curious and be really looking for not just solutions, but an understanding to some of the problems that are out there. And then lastly, we really talked about human-centric technology and how do we actually connect to the doctors, the patients, and the tech to be able to make a better outcome for the patients that is not just better healthcare, but it's a better experience for them so that they can get to that healthcare even sooner and in a way that's more palatable. Wow, that's been awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you so much.
So this has been another great episode of Growing Your Business with People, a podcast dedicated to business leaders who want to grow their business with their biggest and most important investment, and that's people. Please like, comment, and subscribe to our podcast. And most importantly, share with other folks, because this is a podcast about helping leaders to lead better. Thank you so much.